When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi everyone, it's Kevin J. The best thing since winter, and you're listening to the Therapy Suite right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Today, I've invited Dr. Holly Neal, Science Manager and Nutritionist at Yokult UK and Ireland. We discuss gut health. Dr. Neal, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thanks so much, Gavin. It's so lovely to be here.
Great to have you on the show. How's the week been?
Good. Not too bad. I can't complain too much.
It's getting busy down at your end, isn't it, towards the end of the year?
It's a little bit manic, but we're keeping positive.
That's absolutely the best way, isn't it? I think it would be great for yourself to tell us a little bit about yourself before you got involved with Yokult, your bit of your history and that kind of thing. I think it would be great for the listeners.
Sure. Thanks so much again, Gavin, for the introduction. And like I said, so lovely to be joining you. Yes, as you mentioned, I'm the current science manager at Yakult UK in Ireland. So Yakult have been gut experts since 1935, so a very long time. They're celebrating their 90th anniversary this year. So I like to joke, whilst gut health is trending a bit at the moment, we were way ahead of the curve when we were totally obsessed about our guts way before it became cool. So I've been the science manager at Yakult very recently, actually, only for a month or so, but I've been with the company now for 2.5 years. Before I joined Yakult, I did my PhD in nutrition and worked as a researcher for a while. So I love that whole aspect of nutrition and research and looking at studies. And yeah, I'm just really, really passionate about really the power that nutrition can have on our overall well-being. In terms of my role at the minute with Yakult as a science manager, I'm really involved in terms of communicating about the importance of gut health and sharing simple, sustainable ways that we can all implement to improve our gut health and our overall well-being.
Gut health has become huge over the years, isn't it? Social media is just blowing up about it. And regarding my own gut health, I'm always very careful what I'm eating, but you've got to support yourself, as we know. But it's become massive, isn't it? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, again, I don't know whether it's just because I'm in the gut health world that I think everyone's obsessed with it, but I don't think it's just us. Like you say, it's just become so popular, even on social media, whether it's Instagram, TikTok. It seems like everyone's really interested in gut health, which, I mean, I love to see. I know that there's some trends out there that maybe aren't the best or the most nutritionally backed, but I think, yeah, gut health is absolutely a trend that I can get on board with.
How did you come to work for Yokult? What was the kind of the driving force before you joined, and what was going on there?
Sure. So even whenever I completed my PhD, it was in vitamin D. I always wanted to work in the food industry. I think that, yeah, you can make a real difference. And so even during my PhD, my end goal was always not to stay in academia and research as much as I loved it. So I actually took part in a nutrition leadership program. It was a competitive program. You had to apply for it. People from all across Europe were accepted onto it. And during that process, I actually met two people who currently worked at Yakult. One of them was actually the person that then I replaced. So I built up a really good relationship with both of them. And then whenever one of them knew that they were leaving, they thought, oh, Holly, you might be a really good fit for this role at Yakult.
That's great. And I shouldn't be laughing. It's great. I think you met someone at Yokult and then you replaced that person. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't kick them out or anything. They willingly left. But yeah, and actually, I'm still friends with the person as well, so that's probably a good sign.
I think that's great. I think that's brilliant. So most people think the gut is just about digestion. Can you explain about what else it does?
Yeah, really good question. So I like to talk about beyond the belly. So like you say, whenever it comes to gut health, you automatically think of digestion, you may think of your stomach, but actually it extends so much beyond that. And yeah, Phil, we often like to refer to it as the conductor of health. So if you think of like an orchestra, your gut is almost at the center as the conductor, and it's connected with various different organs and systems in the body. So we know that it's involved in the absorption of nutrients. It can produce certain vitamins, such as vitamin K and B vitamins. But actually, we also see that it's linked very strongly to our immune system. It's also been connected with our skin health, brain health, metabolism, hormones. I think we are just really touching the tip of the iceberg whenever it comes to discovering all that our gut is involved with. And specifically, whenever we talk about our gut, it's really from our mouth all the way down right to the other end. It's around 9 meters long. So if you think about two giraffes in height, and it's really the bacteria within our gut, known as the gut microbiota. It's this bacteria within our gut that are linked to all these different organs and systems and seem to be conducting lots of different aspects within the body beyond just digestion.
I think it's really interesting you mentioned about the bacteria in the gut, which helps break down food. It's just generally good. I think there are challenges, though, sometimes. Some people, unfortunately, don't have those good bacteria sometimes, maybe due to poor nutrition and that kind of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, again, whilst the gut can impact so many different organs and systems, there's so many factors that actually impact the gut itself. So there's those that we have control over, so diet, sleep, stress, exercise, lifestyle, even in terms of where we live. If we live somewhere more urban or somewhere more rural, even if you have pets, if you have siblings, there's loads of different factors that impact our gut. And then there's obviously those that we have less control over in terms of age, genetics, even in terms of our birth delivery mode. There's loads and loads of different factors. So I think if we focus on the positive, I think it's really exciting that actually there's lots of things that we can do to positively impact our gut microbiota.
There's certain foods as well that stimulate that. Is that right?
Yeah, so whenever it comes to diet and our gut microbiota, I would say that fiber is king. It is the specific nutrient that our gut bacteria absolutely love. So whenever we consume fiber, these different types of gut bacteria will get to work. They'll break down different fiber, and this produces something called short-chain fatty acids. So these would be compounds like acetate, butyrate, propionate, and it's these short-chain fatty acids that have various different functions in the body and are also linked to lots of different health outcomes as well. So I think whenever we're talking about diet and the gut microbiota, I think fiber is a massive component that I can't speak about highly enough. And I think sometimes whenever it comes to fiber, it maybe needs a little bit of a brand revamp. Sometimes it seems a bit boring or dull or not that exciting, but actually it's so crucial whenever it comes to gut health. Another important factor whenever it comes to diet is the Mediterranean diet. So it's a particular dietary pattern that's really rich in fruits, vegetables, legumes, oily fish. That type of diet has been associated with individuals who have a more diverse selection of bacteria within their gut microbiota. And that diversity is something that we want to see, because generally we see that individuals will have this really diverse group of bacteria, whereas individuals who maybe are struggling with a certain condition or disease, generally they don't have that same type of diversity that you would see in healthy individuals. So I'd say fiber is king. The Mediterranean diet is really well researched. And I know sometimes you maybe hear the phrase about eat the rainbow, and it maybe sounds like a bit of a cheesy phrase or maybe something that you tell kids, but actually there can often be a lot of scientific back into that type of statement whenever it comes to your gut health.
Absolutely. And I always hear about the Mediterranean diet, how positive it is for the body, generally speaking. And olive oil is good as well, I'm guessing. Olive oil is good for, you know,
Yes, you want to be looking for that extra virgin olive oil. And yeah, we see that again as part of that overall Mediterranean diet. I always think it's important not to get too fixated on one particular tiny element of your diet. It's really that overall picture that you want to look at. And I know sometimes the Mediterranean diet, we've heard about it so often, it maybe seems a bit boring, but actually it's so well researched, and we see that there's so many benefits from following that type of dietary pattern.
Does smoking or drinking or both negatively impact the gut health?
Yeah, they could. Now, whenever it comes to alcohol, obviously there can be a broad spectrum in terms of how many units of alcohol someone's having across a week or a month or a year. So obviously that can have an impact. If we flip it slightly, if you think about red wine, that would be rich in a compound called polyphenols. And we do see that polyphenols can have a beneficial effect on our gut microbiota. Obviously, I'm not encouraging people to go out and, you know, stock up on loads of red wine. But we do see, obviously, that, again, within that context of that Mediterranean-style diet can be really beneficial on our overall well-being. And I think, actually, whenever we're talking about Mediterranean diet, so much of that is focused, obviously, on the food itself. But there's often that social aspect that can come with that, that actually taking time to pause, step away from your laptop screen, put your phones down, actually enjoy the food that you're consuming. Don't rush it. Don't be eating it in the car. Enjoy it as a social aspect. I think all of that as well can have a big impact on our gut microbiota too.
Absolutely. Gut health and immunity, you did mention it before, I know. What's the connection, if we go into a bit more detail, between gut health and our immune system?
We know that there's this bi-directional relationship between our gut health and our immune system. So essentially, our gut health can impact our immune function and our immune function can impact our gut health. We see from research that around 70% of our immune cells sit within the gut, and our gut essentially trains our immune system to know what's a potential threat and what actually is just a safe bystander, just let it go past. So I guess you could kind of think of your gut as the teacher and then your immune cells as the students, and our gut is constantly training and educating and communicating with the immune system. So if you notice that potentially someone's gut health isn't optimized or maybe isn't working effectively, that could actually have an impact on someone's immune function, which, like we were discussing earlier, whenever you think about gut health, you automatically think of digestion. You don't necessarily appreciate that it can have that relationship as well on your immune system.
And am I right in saying you mentioned fiber's king? So that, I'm guessing, that helps with the gut and immune system relation. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. So again, whenever we eat different types of fiber, and that's broken down by the gut bacteria, those short chain fatty acids that I mentioned earlier can again have a really beneficial impact on our immune health. And I think whenever it comes to fiber as well, it's really focusing on diversity. So whilst we want our gut bacteria to be as diverse as possible, you also want your diet to be as diverse as possible. So you want lots of different types of fiber in your diet, and then your body will need lots of different types of enzymes to break down those different fibers, then produce different short chain fatty acids. So it's all about diversity and variety as much as possible.
Are all meats okay for the gut? Are they all healthy for the gut, or do some do better than others, basically?
In terms of meat, you asked about?
In terms of, I suppose, maintaining gut health and improving it and just keeping it basically healthy, are all meats just as good as each other for gut health, or do certain meats tend to stand out more than others?
So in terms of meat, I think that's something that generally it depends on the individual. If someone's consuming a high amount of red meat or processed meat, that's something that you'd want to try and reduce in your diet gradually. Whenever it comes to gut health, it's really all about plants. And there is a huge landmark study, the American Gut Microbiome Study, where they found that individuals who consumed 30 more plants across a week had a greater diversity of these gut bacteria compared to people who only ate 10 or less plant foods across a week. So I think whenever it comes to our gut, I tend to focus more so on the plant aspect. So whilst meat can definitely have a role, and yeah, I know lots of people that absolutely would never cut it out, so I'm not necessarily saying everyone has to go vegetarian or vegan or anything like that. It can definitely play a role in an overall well-balanced diet. But whenever it comes to gut health, yeah, it's really focusing on plant and plant diversity. And I think you maybe have seen this idea of 30 plant points that's become a bit of a trendy statement on social media, and this idea that we want to aim for 30 plant points across a week. And I know that the number 30 can feel very overwhelming, but actually it's not just fruit and vegetables. It's also whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, even herbs and spices can all contribute towards getting that 30 plants across a week. And I guess if you want to keep one number in mind whilst you want to aim for 30 plant points, you also ideally want to aim for 30 grams of fibre, which it's around 4% of the UK adult population are hitting that target. So 96 of us have got a lot more work to do. Generally, on average, it's around 16 to 80 grams that we see UK adults are consuming of fibre. So I think, yeah, we need to shout loudly and proudly about fibre and try to make it a bit more cool and trendy.
Absolutely. It sounds like a lot of hard work. Trying to make sure you're getting all the plants in and the fire bone.
Depends who you're asking, maybe. Maybe if you have a completely beige diet, it seems like a big step up. But I think especially whenever it comes to fibre, something really key is that you want to go low and you want to go slow. Because if you suddenly go from having very little fibre and suddenly after hearing this, you decide, yes, I want to consume all the fibre, I'm going to completely transform my diet, then there's a good chance you're going to be very uncomfortable because your body doesn't have the enzymes to break down that fibre and you're likely going to struggle with different digestive issues. So with fibre, if you're really excited about it, you still want to go low and slow, so gradually increase it over the weeks. And you also want to be increasing your fluid intake as well, because that's really important whenever it comes to fibre.
Of course. Having the right amount of whatever fluid, water, whatever, that helps the immune system, the gut health as well. Is that right?
Yeah, so hydration is really key. It just kind of keeps everything moving whenever it comes to gut health. Obviously, can be a big struggle for people maybe struggling with constipation or even actually the other side of things with diarrhea. But hydration is really key. I think sometimes, again, it's not that exciting of a topic, but really important, especially in older adults. We know that as we get older, our ability to recognize thirst decreases. And maybe some listeners might recognize it themselves with maybe older parents or grandparents, and you're constantly having to remind them to drink because they just don't really have that sensation. So yeah, hydration is absolutely key whenever it comes to gut health too.
Brilliant, brilliant stuff. And we're just going to a quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So thank you so much for that introduction into gut health and, you know, how it works, etc. We often hear about boosting gut health or the immune system. Is that really possible?
Very good question. So whenever it comes to our immune health, we actually don't want to boost it. I understand the sentiment behind it, that you think you just want to maximise or you just want it to be optimal and the best it possibly can be. But whenever we talk about boosting our immune system, that doesn't actually really make sense, because you want your immune system to be balanced. You want it to be in this balanced state, because actually if it's being boosted, it means that it's reacting to maybe an infection or an injury or some sort of situation within your body that's having to respond to. And actually if your immune system was overstimulated for a long period of time, that's whenever individuals struggle with maybe autoimmune disorders or chronic inflammation. So actually, whenever it comes to immune health, we want to step away from talking about immune boosting and really just think about immune balancing, because it's that balance that's really important.
I'm one of those ignorant people, unfortunately. I would have thought, oh, yeah.
Definitely not ignorant.
Boost it. But it doesn't sound like a good idea by the sound of things.
Yeah, all about balance.
Absolutely. As we head into the colder months, what are some simple things people can do to support their gut health and immunity?
So I know that we've talked a lot about diet, but as I mentioned, there's lots of different factors that can impact your gut health. So one would be exercise. I know that can be a challenge whenever it's colder, it's darker, it can be difficult to get motivation to maybe want to move about and incorporate some different exercise. But we do see that exercise is positively associated with greater diversity of gut bacteria, which is what we want. So whenever people hear the term exercise, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, going to sign up for a gym or going on a 10k run. It could be as simple as taking the stairs instead of the lift or the escalator. Whenever you do your weekly shop, could you park far away instead of as close to the door as possible? If you have work meetings, could they be a walk and talk meeting? Maybe if you love cups of tea, every time you go to boil the kettle, could you be doing some squats or lunges? Often it could just be about thinking about little, simple ways to incorporate exercise throughout the day, because that can have a massive impact.
Are there certain exercises which might be better than others that which helps with gut health, like, for example, swimming or bike riding or weights or anything like that?
Yeah, not necessarily. What I would say is some of those more mindfulness types of exercise, and maybe things like yoga, we do know that stress can have a big impact on our gut health. So someone could have the absolute perfect gut-friendly diet. They could be having all the fiber, the Mediterranean diet. They could be having polyphenols. They could be eating the rainbow. But if that person is suffering with long-term high stress, then likely they're going to still struggle with gut health. So I think sometimes those exercises that incorporate that sort of mindfulness aspect can be really beneficial, not necessarily just because of the exercise itself, but also because you're managing your stress. And we know that high long-term stress can have a negative impact on our gut health, which we don't want.
Does that mean meditation is good as well for gut health?
Yeah, so obviously whenever we talk about stress management, that looks different for different people. But yeah, absolutely. There is some research that suggests that mindfulness could have a big impact on our gut health. And even with certain conditions that would be typically associated just with gut health, we're now starting to see through this relationship between the gut and our brain, known as the gut-brain axis, by actually targeting your brain, you can then have a big impact on your gut health, which I think is so, so exciting.
Absolutely. Does steam sauna help as well with gut health?
It may do. I'll be honest that I'm not aware of any current research looking at that, although I think I would definitely sign up for that study. I don't think you would have any difficulty recruiting people. But yeah, absolutely could. Again, potentially because of that stress management and that mindfulness aspect. Again, thinking about that gut-brain axis connection and how we know that our brain can impact our gut and our gut can impact our brain. So anything that's really minimizing stress will absolutely support the health of your gut.
I had to ask that because I like to go once a week, maybe to a bit of steam and sauna. So I thought, let me find out if it's beneficial for that as well.
I'm going to have to look it up for you and come back.
I think it's great how psychologically it has an impact on the gut health. I think that's fantastic. And you mentioned a good point. I keep reading about it, but they mentioned the gut as the second brain. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that. So often whenever you refer to the gut being the second brain, it's actually referring to the enteric nervous system. So this is where there's over 500 million nerve cells along the gut, and it's specifically this enteric nervous system that's considered the second brain. So obviously our gut is talking to all our different organs, but our gut's the only one that talks back. And we know that our brain and our gut are physically connected through something called the vagus nerve. And it's this vagus nerve that physically connects them, and actually around 90% of the messages between the gut and the brain are actually coming from the gut to the brain. So I think it's a really exciting area of research. I'd say it's one that a lot of the research has been primarily done in animal studies or observational studies. I think we still have quite a long way to go whenever it comes to some of the human work, but it's definitely one of the aspects of gut health research that I think is going to completely explode over the next couple of years. And I think it's really interesting to see, even in terms of particular neurological conditions or diseases, and how whenever we look at people that struggle with certain conditions and how their gut can be different to healthy individuals as a comparison. So I know even with Parkinson's disease, quite often actually those gut symptoms, such as constipation, can actually start 20 years before someone starts to see those motor symptoms and actually gets a diagnosis. And we see that individuals with Alzheimer's disease or Parkinson's disease, the bacteria within their gut can be quite different to individuals who don't actually have that particular disease.
That's very interesting, you know, really interesting. And then I suppose that's where that saying comes from, you know, follow your gut.
Yeah, or even like, you know, obviously we talk all the time about having maybe butterflies in your stomach before, you know, a big work presentation or coming on the radio. So it's phrases that we say all the time. And I guess that's kind of like simple ways where actually you see this gut-brain axis at play. Maybe, you know, before an exam, someone might have gut symptoms that they never normally struggle with. So yeah, I think it's something that we see quite often day to day, but we just haven't realised that there's good science behind it.
After 90 years of gut science, what's the most exciting thing you've learned about the gut that you'd love everyone to know about?
Big question, Gavin. I'd say in terms of the research, myself personally, I think one of the most exciting and interesting areas of research is looking at female gut health. So historically, females have been left behind whenever it comes to a lot of the human studies, and you'd have a whole separate discussion about why that's been the case. But part of it is because obviously the fluctuations in our hormones throughout the menstrual cycle, and sometimes that can be deemed too complicated to consider in studies. We are starting to see a shift there, and I think even in terms of the media landscape, we're seeing it talked a lot more about in terms of women health, which I think is really, really positive. But actually, whenever it comes to gut research, we're actually seeing that our gut is linked to lots of different life stages throughout a woman's life, and our gut is also linked to different hormones. So for example, whenever a female enters menopause, you see that sharp decline in estrogen, that female sex hormone, but you actually see a sharp decline in the diversity of their gut bacteria as well, and it becomes more similar to the male gut bacteria diversity. There's also, now this is getting scientific, so stay with me, Gavin. Don't want to lose
I'm on the standby.
Yeah, good. So research has identified something called the Easter balloon. So this is a unique or a special group of bacteria within our gut that can actually recycle estrogen. So instead of estrogen being excreted, it can re-enter circulation. And this is really important because whenever we think about estrogen, often people will think of reproductive health, but it's also linked to mood, to bone health, heart health, libido. There's lots of different factors in the body that estrogen is important for. And that can be really important, especially whenever a woman, like I said, enters menopause. That Easter balloon could be even more important because we see that decline in estrogen. So I think whenever it comes to the female gut microbiota is another one of these areas of kind of watch this space. I think there's lots more to come out there, even in terms of linking it potentially to fertility and pregnancy outcomes, our menstrual cycle, PCOS, endometriosis. I think there's lots there that the research is, again, very, very much barely touching the tip of the iceberg whenever it comes to female gut health.
I think that's great that more research is going to be done with female gut health, because absolutely, you know, there's the menstrual cycle and then pregnancy as well. So yourselves are going through so much. I feel more than what us guys go through. We also have our own things as well going on, but nothing compared, I think, to, like, you know, the menstrual cycle and pregnancy, etc. So I think it's brilliant that there's more research going on in that area, which makes
definitely,
a lot of sense.
Definitely agree with you.
It's a bit behind, isn't it? Should have been done some time ago, I would have thought.
Thank you. Yes. More of that attitude, Gavin. We need you running the clinical studies.
I think so. We just got to another quick ad break and we'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So basically, what's some common myths about gut health? Is there anything that we shouldn't really believe?
I would say, now, whenever this is maybe something, not necessarily a gut health myth, but something that I see trending that can be quite frustrating, is the carnivore diet. I feel like this rears its head every now and again, and yeah, garners a lot of attention on social media. So obviously the idea is that your diet is based on animal products, so meat, fish, eggs, some dairy. And whilst those different foods can absolutely have a place in your diet, you know, and it would be high in protein, vitamin B12, zinc, iron, but if your diet is that type of carnivore diet that's solely focused on those animal products, then you're not going to be getting the benefit that comes from plant foods like fiber. So I think that's something to be really, really cautious of, because fiber, as I've mentioned, and I could talk all day about the importance of fiber. Fiber is absolutely king. So I think that's something that stresses me out a little bit whenever I see it starting to trend again, because I think if you're missing out on fiber, you're missing out the benefits of those short chain fatty acids. And we don't necessarily know what's the long term implication of following that type of diet. Because whenever it comes to gut health, it's really all about inclusion rather than exclusion. So thinking about what can you add to your diet, how can you make it more diverse, more colourful? And that could be as simple as, you know, simple, sustainable swaps that you can do throughout different meals or snacking moments to really try and increase diversity. So, yeah, I'm always a little bit hesitant whenever I see the carnivore diet starting to trend again.
You know, fiber-wise, throw out some example for us, fiber. What's good, kind of, what kind of fiber foods are optional for us to eat out there?
Sure. So it's anything really plant-related. So your fruits, your vegetables, you know, your berries, banana, kiwi. Then it's thinking about your whole grains, things like oats, your rice, your pasta, trying to pick whole grain options where possible. I know sometimes people don't like the taste of whole grain, or, you know, can't break away from their white bread or their white rice or their white pasta. But again, like I said, it doesn't have to be big changes. You know, it could be half white pasta, half whole grain. You know, trying simple ways that you can slowly incorporate a bit more fibre. Then it's also beans. I think beans are starting to grow in popularity, so increasing those in your diet, I think, is massive in terms of helping to increase fibre. I think it's like half a can of baked beans is around 8 grams of fibre. And we know that actually there's research that shows that there's a 10% reduced risk of overall mortality with a 10-gram increase in fibre intake. So whilst this whole idea of 30 grams of fibre can feel a bit overwhelming, there's actually so many benefits outside of just gut health. You know, we see with fibre, there, if you consume sufficient amounts of fibre, you see that there's a reduced risk of type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, colon cancer. There's so many different benefits whenever it comes to fibre, but it's really all about those plant foods. Like I said, even nuts, seeds, all add up. It doesn't just have to be about fruit and veg. I think whenever it comes to vegetables, also trying to keep the skin on where possible. So even with potato, if you can keep the skin on, that'll help increase the fibre. Same with different fruits.
Absolutely. And would that include like red beans, kidney beans, all that kind
of beans? Yeah, all of it. Basically. And again, thinking about the idea of diversity. So maybe if you always have kidney beans, why not maybe try mixed beans? So again, thinking about those simple swaps that you can make, or even with nuts, maybe if you love snacking on peanuts, why don't next time you grab a bag of mixed nuts, where our recipe calls for red pepper, why not throw in red, green and yellow pepper? Again, thinking about the idea of diversity, and it doesn't have to be these huge, massive, difficult changes. Just those simple, small, sustainable swaps is what it's all about whenever it comes to gut health.
I think twiglets apparently are meant to be good for fibre.
I don't think I've read that paper. You have to send me that study afterwards. I'm not quite sure. Again, you need to enjoy yourself as well. You know, I think,
I'm trying to find a way of getting something. Ooh, what's got fibre in it that's really interesting? Or twiglets have? I don't know. Me just throwing that out there, you know. But I don't think listeners should take me too seriously. So basically, there's so much information about probiotics and fermented foods. What's the difference?
Really, really good question, and something that I'm asked all the time. So whenever it comes to fermented foods, this could be things like yogurt, sauerkraut, kimchi, kombucha, miso, tempeh. Those are examples of different types of fermented food where there's been a desired bacterial growth. Now, what's important whenever it comes to fermented foods is that not all of them, whenever they reach the supermarket shelf, will still contain live bacteria. So some of them might have been heat treated, and therefore they may be in like the ambient part of the supermarket compared to the chilled section. So whenever it comes to fermented foods, you just want to look at the label and make sure that they either mention particular bacteria names, or it has some mention of maybe live cultures or live bacteria. Now, whenever it comes to probiotics, people often think that they're both automatically the same, but that isn't necessarily the case. So a probiotic has a very strict definition, and it has to contain live microbes. They have to be known to reach the gut alive, and really importantly, there has to be a health benefit associated with it. So again, with a probiotic, whenever you go to the supermarket and you look at a probiotic, it should mention the particular type of bacteria name. It should also mention the quantity of bacteria in that product, and there will be health benefits to back up that particular probiotic. So it can be a bit confusing between the two. But yeah, it's just whenever it comes to probiotics, there's a really strict definition for it.
Okay. And so I know the common thing, and you mentioned a few things, but yogurt seems to be one of those, you know, as a typical example. And that means all yogurts, Greek yogurt, all the yogurts. Would that be right?
So again, you want to be looking for it to say something like live cultures or live bacteria. So that's ultimately what you're looking for on a packaging whenever it comes to any type of fermented food.
And so cheeses have also got some level of probiotic foods in them. Is that right?
Yeah, that would be another example. Even different types of meats, depending on how they're processed, they could have live bacteria in it as well. So there's quite a selection of fermented foods, and I think it's really nice to see that there's a lot more available in the supermarket. I know probably about 25 years ago, my grandma would have been serving you sauerkraut as part of a salad, and I don't know where she managed to find that, probably in some quirky health food store, whereas nowadays it's obviously a lot more mainstream. And so I think it's really exciting to see that rise in people's interest in fermented foods, and people obviously, that goes hand in hand, people want to support their gut health as well.
I think it's brilliant. I think people tend to incorporate, like, as long as it has the right probiotics, you know, the right stuff in it, but, you know, in the morning, having a yogurt with your fruits, your fiber, you know, the berries and all the rest of it. So that sounds like a perfect start to the day in terms of gut health foods-wise.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be really helpful to include it at the start of the day and kind of get your day off to do a good solid start with a good gut-friendly breakfast.
I know we've mentioned it before, we often hear about the gut-brain connection. Basically, I think we've already covered that, haven't we? I was going to ask a bit more about that, because I find it so interesting, really, about... Can you give us a bit more details about that? Would that be all right?
Yeah, of course. I think one factor that we know obviously impacts our gut and impacts our brain is stress. And I think, obviously, nowadays, I think most of us are maybe highly stressed or having a stressful day, week, month, maybe even a year. But I think that's a massive factor that can impact our gut via that gut-brain axis. And that's primarily through this hormone called cortisol, which is really triggered whenever we're in stressful situations. And on one hand, it's good because it triggers this sort of fight or flight response, which in certain circumstances can be useful and beneficial. But it's whenever you have that long-term high stress scenario where you've got those high levels of cortisol, that's whenever that can have a negative impact on your gut wall lining. It can cause something called leaky gut, and that's whenever you may struggle a bit more with some gut symptoms.
I've heard of leaky gut before.
So it's really to do with the gut wall lining. Whenever that's maybe negatively impacted or isn't really as strong as it could or should be, and whenever essentially different things can then pass through the gut lining that you wouldn't necessarily want. But I absolutely agree. I think gut-brain axis is so fascinating. And there's so much more research to come out, I think, in terms of that connection between the two and how diet and lifestyle factors can impact the gut-brain axis.
Absolutely. For someone who's never really thought about their gut health before, where should they start?
So I think I would say that the science of gut health can be very, very complicated and very complex. But I would say whenever it comes to looking after your gut, it doesn't necessarily have to be as complicated as we necessarily want to make it. So I thought we like to talk about the five pillars of gut health. So I'd encourage people to start with one of these, depending on which one of them is maybe the easiest to implement. So that would be diet, hydration, sleep, stress management, and exercise. So I think focusing on one of those, and again, thinking about those small sustainable changes is really crucial. So whether with diet, you're thinking about doing those simple swaps. So like I said, instead of always going for a single product, thinking how you can make it with the single can of kidney beans, changing that to mixed beans, changing the colours of the peppers that you always select. I think that's really crucial in terms of increasing our fibre. Whenever it comes to exercise, again, it doesn't have to be anything too intimidating or scary. Start small and build up that. Sleep is something that we haven't really talked about, and I know sometimes it can feel like a bit of a badge of honour that, oh, I've survived on only X number of hours of sleep last night. So I think we need to get away from that mindset and actually recognise that sleep is such a powerful component of our overall well-being that we absolutely cannot overlook. Again, you could have the perfect gut-friendly diet, but if you're struggling with poor sleep, then there's a good chance your gut health is going to be struggling too. So I think it's trying to focus on sleep. I know I would absolutely hold my hand up and say I'm the worst for this, but being in bed and just doom scrolling on social media, it's so unnecessary. I'm getting absolutely no benefit from it. But just putting down the phone, even if you don't put it in another room, put it in airplane mode, set it a little bit further away. If you struggle with maybe light in your room or noise, maybe think about getting an eye mask or earplugs to help support your sleep. We know that our gut loves rhythm and it loves routine. So we have this internal body clock called our circadian rhythm, and our gut loves this. So if you can keep your sleep, awake time and bedtime roughly around the same time, that's something that your gut bacteria is going to thrive on. Again, I'll hold my hands up and say that compared to the work week versus the weekend, there's a massive difference in terms of what time I go to bed and get up. So I am, yes, speaking to myself here too, but I think sleep can be really, really crucial, aiming for those 7 to 9 hours where possible, and really trying to prioritize that and seeing it less of a badge of honor for surviving on minimal sleep.
Absolutely. I think we're all a bit guilty, aren't we? You know, scrolling on social media at night. I know exactly what you mean from experience, you know.
Yeah, so, the algorithm knows what to show us and we just get hooked in, and you think you're going to bed early and suddenly 1 or 2 hours has passed by and you don't know where the time has went. So, yeah, we're all in it together.
Those algorithms are very dangerous.
Yeah.
You mentioned balance rather than boosting. Can you talk to us about what throws our gut out of the balance in the first place?
Sure. So again, some of those factors that I talked about that can have a positive impact, if we flip them, they can then have a negative impact. So if you're highly stressed, if you have limited physical activity, if you're getting poor sleep, illness, if someone's taking a dose of antibiotics, again, potentially travel can knock off our gut. There's lots of different factors that can have a negative impact on our gut. However, in general, there is possibility there to sort of restore, bring back that balance within your gut. So I think it doesn't have to be all doom and gloom. If I've listed all those things off and a listener is thinking, oh no, every single one of them is me. Do you know, I think it's those small steps that we can change to actually see a change in our gut microbiota, especially with diet. I think diet is probably one of the most influential factors and can have a relatively large difference within a short period of time. So I think it's not being too discouraged if you feel like you're highly stressed, you've got poor sleep, your diet's low in fiber, you've maybe just come back from illness, you've taken a dose of antibiotics, all is not lost.
Thank you so much for your time today. It's been great to hear about the gut health. If people want to reach out and ask any questions, is it okay for people to reach out to you at all?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I'm the science monitor at Yakult, so they can reach out via Instagram, Facebook, as well as our email address too on the website.
Brilliant, brilliant. Okay then. Well, thank you for your time today. Much appreciate it.
No, thank you so much, Gavin. I really, really appreciate the invite. It's been so lovely to chat.
And thank you to our listeners. You know you can find me at GavinJ417 on Instagram.